Ja, hallo. My name is Jakob Bostow. That's better. I just want to start this thing off. Is the sound okay?
Okay.
I want to start this thing off by saying that it's quite exotic for me to be invited to speak in a seminar about the public art. Because for me, art has always been a very private and intimate thing. I'm from the suburbs, more specifically Elsinore, the city of Hamlet. And anyway, in the suburbs, art is something you sort of hide away from your parents. It's something you lock yourself in your room and to do your art. So for me, even the way back from when I was a kid, it was always art for me. It was always kind of like a confession share or this diary thing. It's really like a personal, intimate thing. So in this short lecture, I will hopefully be able to explain how I got from having this sort of like starting point in art and how I got to do more public experiments with art. I started off as being a comic book artist. Basically, my first art show was also the publication of my first solo comic book, so it's always been running separately. These two tracks, the comic books and the art. But still, these two different formats are quite different. I would say that the comic book format is again a much more intimate format. It's something that is read by often solitary people in the rooms, read alone, whereas art is something you experience in a museum or a gallery with lots of people around. Art is often quite a social thing, as we know from openings and so on. So actually, a lot of my early comic books was about this difference between comics and so-called fine art. This is a comic book I did in 98, and this had a lot of, this early material was a way for me to deal with this art world that I also had kind of a foot in, and I was kind of quite alienated by the whole art world. So again, I mean, my starting point was this personal intimate thing, and just this, this quite public display was quite alien to me. So in a lot of the comics, I made fun of art, basically. That's how the whole thing started. And this here, I make fun of a feminist artist and a German performance artist who comes to a show and wins the affection of the feminist artist. But basically, after a while, I mean, it was really my serious ambition to become a comic book artist. But after a few years, I really got sick of the whole thing. I mean, socially, it was very bad. I mean, comics is not something that people are impressed with. If you say to people, "Oh yeah, I do art," people are like, "Oh, is that so?" And people are quite intimidated by it. But if you tell people you do comics, it's like, "Oh yeah, I have a box of funny cartoons at home," And it's like, it was annoying, basically. There was no respect, and even worse, there was no money involved. So basically, I was trying to make a strategy to get out of this comic book world and sort of get further on with my life. And one experiment at this point that started also, I was sort of like fascinated with a lot of like corporate mythologies, and so I tried to work with art. This is like an 8mm project that was shown in the art space, and it's how can you say, a reconstruction of the life of the Kellogg's mascot Tony the Tiger. And it was a sort of a way to work around corporate mythologies and do it in sort of like an entertaining way. Another strategy I sort of tried out was, instead of doing comics, I was trying to, okay, so that doesn't work for me, so instead I'll turn myself into a comic character and see how that works. And this is actually an animation I did for an exhibition, something called Momentum in Norway. It's in Biennale up there, and it's about my experience as being a worker at the Gallup Institute, where they conduct these talks and so on. Again, I was interested in this whole corporate, it's a new interest for me, this sort of like corporate thing. Gallup is quite an interesting place because it's really like some kind of cornerstone of democracy that, this is how you get in touch with the voice of the people and so on. So this was about my experiences at this place. But then at the same time, I had for a long time been fascinated with the like high conceptual artists, like, well, for example, like Jeff Koons, who incorporated his own personality or his own life into his art, and also artists like Bill Drummond, the guy who was a pop musician from the group KLF, but he also did conceptual art, really like inspired by Fluxus art stunts and Sitius's art stunts, and he got famous when he just burned £1 million and so on. And I was really like, for me, this was sort of a way to get out of the comic book world and sort of try something new and sort of like separate the images and text from the comic books into two different departments. So yeah. So this was written down as a text. This project. This was a project where I traveled all the way to the palace of Ceausescu in Romania to fire off a rocket with a $1 bill around it. And it was my own kind of protest against IBM, who moved into the palace of Ceausescu to do business there. This palace is basically so big that they didn't know what to use it for. So IBM and other private companies move in. And for me, this was really like a symbol of how, the old ideologies like communism has died down and we're entering a new sort of like global capitalist era. And for me, this was important in the 90s. The 90s was all hype. I mean, .com didn't even, this was done 1 year before .com thing died. And the 90s was all hyper positive and hyper, it was really annoying. I mean, everybody thought that in 5 years, everybody would live in this sort of like Star Trek society where all the doors were like, then everybody would be, make money by creating homepages for each other. This was sort of like a satire against this. And then also at this time in my life, I was also experimenting with ways to infiltrate the public mind. This is a project which has never been publicly discussed before, actually, because there's some legal issues concerning it. But it's done together with a journalist from Denmark's radio, from Mads Brøgger, and basically we created. This was this happened like this is like 1 month after 9/11. And we decided, we had made some plans that we wanted to create a fake underground society that sort of works together with private corporations. We decided we wanted to create a fake underground Christian society that wanted to empower Christian values by corporations with by working together with private corporations. And we called the company Civita, or the organization Civita Stay, which is a Christian term for the God-given society. It's like Christian Sharia, the society where God's laws, the rules. So our first collaboration was together with a Danish toy company, BR. And we decided, since it was 1 month after 9/11, that we wanted to learn kids how to combat terrorism. And we decided to really to talk in the language of kids. So on the front page, it's a little hard to see here, but there's a questionnaire on how to best combat terrorism, and on the back side there's a little game where you catch Bin Laden. It's a game where you have to help a Christian priest in Kabul who has got a track of Bin Laden and who wants to help a policeman to catch him. And anyway, this is. I mean, it's kind of very like juvenile kind of atmosphere, very very childish, you could say. But still, for both of us, it was quite important to be able to dare to speak about these things. Because, I mean, now if you speak about 9/11, it's a total cliche, and the images of the World Trade Center, that's not valuable as art anymore. That's sort of like, it's outdated. The image has been overused. So. A lot of these projects are also about being able to move fast and move outside of the institution, because I mean, if you have to wait for a guy to give you a solo show where you want to talk about something that you want to talk about right now, I mean, it's probably going to be outdated at this point. So our whole thing was to try to talk about things before the issue was settled, and everybody probably remembers this, like months after 9/11, people were very afraid, and marriages got broken up over this thing, people didn't know how to feel about this. And of course now every limousine liberal is against those groups, and that's it. But that's not interesting anymore. It was interesting in the first months after that happened. anyway, that's a bit of a sidetrack. These projects that we're going through now are sort of like also small experimentations, you could say, in how to infiltrate the public mind. I should add with this Christian thing here that actually there was the Danish newspaper Extra Bladet. This little thing here was distributed to kids in school and in areas of Copenhagen where a lot of kids live. And actually the Danish newspaper Extra Bladet, they picked up on the story. And they called a theologian, a guy who studies religion, and he explained, yes, the Civitas Dei is this is a Christian concept. And suddenly there was it was out in the mainstream media that actually there was a Christian organization that worked together with private corporations that wanted to implement Christian values. And actually this happened. I mean, in Denmark in the last 2 or 3 years, people, if you open up a newspaper, people talk about Christian values all the time. It's absurd. Nobody would have expected this in the Happy.com days where everybody, but this happened. I mean, religious wars are back in fashion again. Anyway, this is sort of like small experimentation. I'm going to talk about two sort of projects where I use more energy and time and money on these projects. This is a project that's called my Doomsday Weapon. It's basically, the whole thing started off, I did a magazine together with some other artists and writers, the editor of the magazine's idea was that for the premier issue of this magazine, I should go to a weapons fair in China with a fake weapon. And the whole thing really basically started off as a joke. We were joking about it would be so fun to make fun of the image of Denmark as a peaceful nation and so on. Everybody knows all this bullshit about Danish design and this image of Denmark as a clean, social, democratic, whatever, Nordic paradise. So we wanted to make sure, how would a club look like if it was designed by Arne Jacobsen or something like that. But then a really strange thing happened. It was 2001 and 2002. Then I met an industrial designer at a concert in Copenhagen, actually, and I told him, I have to go to this weapons fair in 2 weeks, and I need your help to design a weapon. And basically, I told him, like, this is a weapons fair that takes place in China, a country that butchered students in Tiananmen Square only 10 years ago. So we have to make a weapon that sort of works around this, that the perfect weapon for the Chinese military today, the perfect weapon for them to control the population without hurting them, without hurting the image of the Chinese state. So I sat together with the designer, Christian von Bengtson, a very talented man who studies space architecture now, space design now, I think. And we came up with this thing. It's this thing called the ID Sniper, and it's basically a weapon that can shoot off GPS chips, like you see here, into the bodies of demonstrators, so that the authorities can track these people down and punish them after the cameras have gone away. So the whole thing really was to do the most sinister, evil thing at all. I mean, this is why our company was called Empire North, and the slogan was the logical solution. At first, I wanted the slogan to be like a spin-off of the Nazi classic, The Final Solution, or Der Endlösung. So I wanted it to be finally come a solution. But that was it didn't work out. We ended up with this thing, the logical solution, which I think is quite good also. And basically, this is how, the whole thing was quite punk rock and roll. It was really cheap, fast, and out of control. There was 3 weeks to go to this to the opening of the weapons fair. I mean, we didn't have so much funding. I had to go alone with my own digital camera. Nobody knew how I was going to translate whatever the Chinese people said to me. Nobody knew how this was going to be documented and funded. Everything was out of control, basically. So I was just working like hell with this. With Christopher Bengtson and trying to get it finished as fast as possible. But basically, we made this promotional poster, and this was sort of what I had to bring to this webinar, that promotional poster of describing this webinar, and some fake business cards. And this is how we presented ourselves. And this was, it goes like this. As the urban battlefield grows more complex and intense, new ways of managing and controlling crowds are needed. The attention of the media changes the rules of the game. Sometimes it is difficult to engage the enemy in the streets without causing damage to the all-important image of the state. Instead, Empire North suggests to mark and identify a suspicious subject on a safe distance, enabling the National Law Enforcement Agency to keep track on the target through a satellite in the weeks to come. Which like we sort of like experimented with sort of kind of like corporate sort of like very abstract defense language. This is how we pretend ourselves. We combine our standing know-how and network of gifted ad hoc consultants, a flair for data design and creative thinking, always focused on discovering the logical solution. So this was sort of our business propaganda. But again, this is. Everything was now when you present this you know this drawing, it looks so controlled, but everything was chaos. Like I was at an exhibition in Hamburg before I had to go there, and basically I had to sit in this hotel room that was owned by some Iraqis, and I had to prepare and read up on all this technical aspects of this weapon, like how many millimeters was the what's the GPS chip, what kind of firing system we're going to be using, how are our funding plans and so on. But off I went, and the first thing I saw when I came to the weapons fair was the Danish flag raised only for me, which was a little intimidating. But it got even worse as I got a little credential signed here. It got more and more hardcore. I took this image just before I entered the basic fair, and this, I mean, this is like a police tank. And I was like, you know, the name of the fair was called China Police 2002, and I was like, you know, this is not police equipment. This is military equipment. But it seems like there's a new trend that these two things seems to merge a little bit these days. And basically, the whole fair was maybe also comparable to an art fair. So like it's just something, a fun place to go. There would be like a newlywed people who would come and pose in front of the new military gear. And there was a lot of European companies, also BMW were there. And this was at this point that I felt really lost and alone, because I mean, BMW had a stand, probably 200,000 to 300,000 euro stand with 11 police cars and police motorcycles they wanted to sell to the Chinese, and I only had like a poster that was printed at a local printing shop in Copenhagen called Mr. Pupi and some fake business card that I cut out myself, and I thought, you know, this is never going to work. I mean, nobody would believe this. I should also add that the whole thing was about to be cancelled just one day before I had to leave, because the editor of the magazine was like, no, we have to cancel it, you know, you're going to a military dictatorship and nobody would believe this crazy weapon and it's too dangerous for me and I can't be responsible and we have to go back to the Arne Jacobsen Club. But this is too late, we couldn't fabricate new material, so there was like no way back. And the whole scenario really was absurd. Lots of food. This is a robot fitted with guns, the Robocop thing. I saw things like this in the 80s in the cinema, in Elsinore, now it's here. And also this strange mixture between like a communistic propaganda and this all this hyper-capitalism. And it seems to work out pretty well together. And this is the stand of Honda. Also a really absurd place. They had like three teenage girls in latex clothes with berets on, like a little militaristic, and they were posing in front of the new Honda motorcycles while when a soundtrack of manic Japanese techno music was blaring full blast in the background, and that was quite a stand. I was just next to them. This is also, I'm just showing you some images to give you a general idea of the whole atmosphere. This is the mascot of one of the biggest weapons manufacturers in the world, who Superwoman Export is a former state-owned Russian manufacturer of weapons. And you know, looking at this, you know, it's a little bit similar to a Mike Kelly piece, something like this. Looking at this, this is really like looking into a world that was like spin up. I'm told that I wrap this up. Yeah. That was. How much time do I have?
5 minutes.
Okay. That was. You know, this is just looking at this mascot for a weapons company that looked like this. It was really like looking at a world that was spinning out of control. Yeah, absurd. The situation was quite absurd. I'm gonna fast forward now because I only have 5 minutes. So this is a Chinese weapons dealer. This is me, and this was how I presented the whole thing. And basically, the whole scenario was like I was in a state of nervous breakdown for 3 days. I couldn't deal with this. Basically, my body was shaking, and I was probably like sit in the corner. Luckily, a friend of mine had given me some Valium to food. And that's sort of like carried the whole thing through. So the whole scenario was also like it was. When you do some sort of these things, it's sort of like when a boxer enters a boxing ring. It's terrible. You feel like shit for 2 weeks before, and you're sick. You get physically ill and so on. It's terrible. But luckily, I met some really good business people who like my project. This is some Brazilian weapons dealers, and they were giving really good feedback on the thing. They were like, well, you know, we have a lot of problems in Brazil with people escaping from prisons, but with your technology, we can keep them safe. And this was when I realized that people actually took this seriously. I mean, the main concern for my safety, and this was also the other guys who were vaccinated, was that I would be discovered there. Who would believe that that technology, we call it a piece of pre-crime technology, a piece of technology that would enable people to catch the criminal before the criminal has committed the crime. It's absurd. It breaks with all logic. And the people liked it. They were into it. They wanted it. And this was also an experience about the projects. Like Hannah Arendt, she wrote a book about the banality of evil, about the Eichmann trials in Jerusalem in 1961. And these people, they're not evil. They're very banal, boring family people. They just have a really, really screwed up value set. And when you look them in the eye, they you can see that they can't look good in their eye when you do for a longer time. They know they're not doing the right thing. But basically, I'm gonna fast forward a little bit more. This is how it was. So this was wrapped up. The whole thing ended up. I got like offers from Chinese police officials with connections to the government. The Chinese Minister of the Interior, he walked past my booth, and was very, really interested. And there was a company that started to go into negotiations with me about producing this weapon. It sort of got out of control, and suddenly this fake little monster I created was turning into reality. And this is a little bit what this kind of project is about, I would say. It's all about creating a sort of a mirror, creating a mirror that you can put up to the face of the monster so that the monster can look himself in his eyes. It's all about creating an atmosphere where even the evil people can say all that evil stuff they are normally afraid to say. So this is sort of like a way where you can hack yourself into the subconsciousness of the demons of this world, so to speak. And I think I probably have to run. Finish it up now. I could make one little show. This is how it was shown as an artwork. This is inspired by Chris Burden, and he's like showing it in a very minimalistic way. Received a lot of press, and I start to get offers. This is way more interesting. This is John Friedlander, who's a senior security analyst at Prudential Financial. It's one of the biggest money institutions in the world. They are a big investment fund in America, and they also have a security department. And they wanted to come and check this out when this was presented in as an art show in New York. The designer, Christopher Bates from Denmark, he got all his emails. That's a long story, but there was some media storm about it because it was slash dotted, which is this website. the whole, I gave an interview to the New York Public Radio, and they, this online magazine, they wrote about it as if it was real, even though at the interview I said this, you know, it was an art show and so on. And because it was on Slashdot, a guy on computer week in Australia, he wrote about it, and suddenly everybody thought it was real, and I started to get these offers from all these creeps around the world. This is an image of Sophie to show you that I still like to draw. This is, I'm just going to end up with this project. This is one of the latest things I did. It's a project called Days to Push, and the whole thing there was to sort of like do the same strategy as my Doomsday Ray, to hack yourself into a place where you didn't belong, to expose the subconsciousness of a certain situation. And this is how we were presented. We had like fake other egos. And we have these fake statues that we made to people who pay tribute to greatness. The committee behind Days to Push decided to honor 10 outstanding Americans with a freedom fighter statue. So these, we're sort of like using all these rituals, as you know, the rituals of gift giving. So we're half people say no to gift. So basically, we start to give gifts to all these super hardcore, pro-nuclear war fundamentalist Christians, and sort of see how they react to that. This is at the Republican convention in Madison Square Garden. And I'm just going to end this thing off with a fan letter from one of the new Danish right-wing politicians. He's called Morten Messerschmidt. And he is in parliament. He wasn't at this point. He because the Danish Folkeparti, they had a landslide election. And they, basically, he's a very young kid, he's only 25 years old, and he got into government. He's deciding what's happening in this country now. He sent us a fan mail to the Days to Push fan mail. And I'm just going to read a quote from this, and I'm going to end this thing off. Because this quote is really from somebody who needs to have his head examined for paranoid disorder. He says, basically, he starts the whole thing off by saying that he's really happy that somebody wants to bridge Danish politics and American politics. And then he starts to make fun of France. And he says, France has surrendered with trade deals, and they hope in this way to become the last country that surrenders when the armies of Islam seriously will come over the borders of Europe. This hope is with 5 million Muslims in France hard to trust. Therefore, I'll be trusting President Bush. And, you know, this is a guy who decides what happens in this country. So, it's all about getting into the minds of people like him, and also just getting into the world generally. I mean, the world is a wonderful and horrible place, and we have to get out into it in order to get the full experience of life and art.